You and I back together again, chatting it up on Thursday, July the 20th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. I started the show off with my thoughts on the latest controversy surrounding Bridgeport politics, and yes, it has to do with absentee ballots. Journal Inquirer Manchester columnist Chris Powell checked in, as well as Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi. He also had an update on the ballot situation in the city of Bridgeport. All right, there's never a dull moment. No, there really isn't. There's never a dull moment. It's why I love this job. There's never a dull moment. You know, you go into election cycles, you go into election cycles and whatever. And you look at stuff and you say, well, maybe this will be different from 2 years ago or from 4 years ago. And then you say, well, yeah, sure, it'll be. They got their act cleaned up now. It's not going to happen. And then you get a little indication. Yes, boys and girls. Right up front, the door knocks, and you say to yourself, well, all right, maybe maybe this is the whole thing. I don't know. What am I talking about here? Well, and he'll be on with us later on, our buddy, our pal, Lenny Grimaldi from onlyinbridgeport.com. But he posted a piece. When did Lenny post this? He posted this yesterday. Yesterday, mid-afternoon, and I'll just read the headline here. Again, don't yell at me. Don't call. Now, I want you to call me up, obviously, at 333-9422, 333-WICC. But understand, I'm very big into the don't shoot the messenger deal here, okay? Don't scream at me. Don't yell. I'm only telling you what's out there. If you're so busy that you haven't seen it and you get, oh, where'd you get that? This dark money group that I guess is financed by a couple of people in BlackRock, whatever, they are signing out. And I'm just going to read you the headline right here. It's at onlyinbridgeport.com. And if you want to echo your or voice your feelings on this, you can at 333-9422. Dark money group signs out a blizzard. That's a lot. A blizzard of absentee ballot applications to support Marilyn Moore for mayor. Now, on its face, this is me talking now, not Lenny. He'll be with us in a few hours. On the face of it, there's nothing wrong with absentee ballot applications, right? You know, I'm not one of those guys that's so cynical, wink, wink, that something right up front to me is some sort of an indictment on someone or some group or some cause or whatever. But, Lenny writes here, the organization is backing State Senator Marilyn Moore for mayor, raising eyebrows about potential illegal coordination of campaign expenses, yada, yada, yada. But they have signed out a record. Now, I don't know whether you know this. This is why I wanted to start with this so you know here. Bridgeport Generation Now votes walked into the town clerk's office. And again, don't yell at me. Don't scream at me saying, what are you talking about this for? Because it's out there and you should know. They signed out a record 15,000 absentee ballot applications. 15,000. For a race that, as Lenny points out here, and maybe some other people would agree or not, should draw 12 to 15,000 people. We're talking about the primary coming up, which for all intents and purposes is the general election of Bridgeport. I mean, who knows? Stranger things have happened. You may see one or two of those people defeated in the primary tend to hop into the race as a ride-in candidate. I mean, you don't know. You don't know for the general. You have no idea. Third-party lines, fourth-party lines, whatever. 5, 6, 7. Put as many people on the stinking ballot as you can. I'm into mass confusion. But 15,000 absentee ballots. Really? Now, again, this is what I and some other some other people point out. Now, again, I'm not in any way, shape, or form accusing anyone of anything. But, as some people have said, when you have this easy of an access to absentee ballots, even in a realm of, you know, all good intentions, people look at this and they say, well, really? 15,000 absentee ballots in a race that, as Lenny points out here, and as some other people have said, generally 10 to 13,000 people voting in some way, shape, or form, or with 40,000 registered Democrats in Bridgeport. Now, again, here's my question. And again, like I said, I don't live in Bridgeport, which I think to me is an advantage because I have no pony in the race, no dog in the race, no kitty in the race, no puppy in the race, no horse in the race, no pig in the race, no alligator in the race, no manner of any animal in the race. I sit back in the stands and I watch and go, that's interesting. So what do you think about this? 15,000 absentee ballot applications, according to this story, in a universe of 40,000 registered Democrats, and in a race that estimates are 10 to 13,000 people may end up voting. Now, I know some of you may call and say, well, you know, you have to order more ballots or requisition more ballots than you need because they could be damaged. There could be water damage. There could be waste. There could be fraud. Okay, I got that. You know, it's not a one-for-one thing. It's not, oh, let's order the, or let's requisition, or let's get our hands on the fewest ballots possible. No, it doesn't work that way, whether it's Republican or Democrat, governor, mayor, state senator, state house, or whatever. We all know that. But I don't know, do you find this a little, I don't want to use the word disconcerting, because I think if you use the word disconcerting, you're already kind of assuming there's going to be something, you know, underhanded. And I don't want to put that out there. Honestly, I don't. I'm being completely honest and upfront with you. I'm just looking at numbers here. And again, we know what happened 4 years ago with turnout at the actual polling places versus absentee ballots on what happened there. Now, I'm not saying there was anything underhanded there. But again, some people have called me over the years and say, why is there always a cloud? Why do people, when you ask them about this, when they call in this show, they kind of throw their hands up in the air? You know, you would assume, because you can't really see on the radio, but it's in your mind. Yeah, they throw their hands up in the air and say, whatever, it's Bridgeport. So what are your thoughts on this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So this group that kind of parachuted in, and I'm just kind of relaying the details here. Don't shoot the messenger here. Or as, you know, as Elton John said in that classic early album of his, don't shoot the piano player. Or don't shoot me. I'm only the piano player here. In the establishment, in the tavern, in the bar and grill. But you have what is being referred to, at least in some areas, as a group swooping in, giving something like 90 or donating or in some way, shape, or form, committing about $96,000 to Marilyn Moore's campaign. Okay, I have no problem with that if it's on the up and up. But then also signing out, says here, a record 15,000 absentee ballots to mail unsolicited applications to certain voters in anticipation of the primary. See, that's to me, and I'm not, look, again, let me say up front, so you don't call up and scream at me, See, this is the kind of thing that makes people cynical. It does. A vote is a... as much as I don't like to use the word, a vote is a sacred thing, is it not? It is your commitment to a campaign, to a certain candidate, saying, hey, I trust you with my endorsement, how little and seemingly insignificant it may be in an ocean of thousands or millions, but that's important to people. So apparently already into this race, we have, says here in this report, 15,000 ballot applications, presumably, according to this story again, to mail unsolicited applications to a universe of voters. So why are we mailing? Now, here's a question I do have. Why are we, or why would anybody in any party, in any race, in any state, mail out, presumably, again, this is all presumed, thousands of absentee ballot applications? See, this is the kind of thing that makes people cynical. And this is the kind of thing where, whether it was Republicans at the state capitol or some other people who say, hey, do we really want to go full in with this basically mail, vote by mail thing in Connecticut, which technically we don't have, but now that we've gone to no excuse absentees, is this what we're going to be left with here? And then, of course, you get the usual suspects who will come up and say, well, you just want to disenfranchise people. No. But again, let me go back to my original thesis on this whole thing. It's not that hard to vote. It's not. And even if you say, well, these are ballots for people who live in the senior housing and the senior complexes. Well, OK, is the process going to be followed to the letter of the law? Because I've had people on this radio station, on this program over the past few years say, well, no, there's, you know, a lot of corners are cut. A lot of winks and nods take place. Oh, really? That's great. That's fabulous. that engenders the public's endorsement. Yeah, that engenders the public saying, yeah, boy, I tell you, I'm right up there with what you're doing. So are we on the way here to maybe the morning after the primary, or maybe the morning after the general election coming up in September of November, respectively? Are we on the way to saying, oh, here we go with the absentees again? Look, don't shoot the messenger here, kids. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not the only guy or gal saying this and reading these reports and going, oh, here we go. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. According to this, from our guest coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, Bridgeport Generation Now Votes has signed out for a record 15,000 ballot applications, absentee ballot applications, in a city with 40,000 registered Democrats for a race that's anticipated to draw 10 to 13,000. Does that make you a little uncomfortable or not? Checking in for his monthly go-round with us, columnist extraordinaire from the Journal Inquirer of Manchester, Chris Powell, joins us. Chris, good afternoon, sir, and how are you today?
Oh, I'm still dressing myself, even if it shows.
I've used that line on a couple of people. They like that. How are you? I'm still dressing myself. I love that. I love that, Chris. Chris, your newest column coming out in the next couple of days, this coming weekend, you talk about, and I love the word you use here, the hysteria about what happened when the Supreme Court said, you know, race can be taken into account, but it can't be a standalone checkoff on college admissions.
Yeah, the Supreme Court, when it first took up affirmative action in the Bakke case from California in 1978, was, you know, pretty uncertain about it and ambivalent. Backe was a white student who was challenging affirmative action in the University of California because he couldn't get in even though his scores were good. He won the case for himself, but the court still said that race could be used as a factor. But the court was very ambivalent about it then. It's been ambivalent about affirmative action since then. And I think they finally came around to the plain reading of the Constitution and the civil rights laws from the 60s and beyond that, no, we're not supposed to judge people according to their race, so you can't do it anymore. And it's a perfectly plausible, sensible decision. It's just it's upset a lot of the political infrastructure that's grown up around affirmative action since then.
And Chris, one thing I think the case did give us, and I was talking about this with another guest the other day, is because of discovery and because of what the media was able to get a hold of, we really did see how the system at Harvard worked and their, you know, the people that read the applications and what way they were judging race, and the people at the University of North Carolina, too, because, you know, Chris, we hear about college admissions, but it's kind of this shrouded mystery, and it's kind of like Colonel Sanders' 11 herbs and spices. Like, you can taste it, but you don't know what it is, right?
Well, the case has shown that Asian students who typically score far above everybody else because they work harder than they complain, unlike all the rest of us, have been discriminated against very powerfully. Colleges, you know, don't have to go just by academic performance. They can give applicants credit for, you know, personality and achievements outside academics and things like that. And the recent case showed that the racket has been to penalize the Asian applicants by marking them way down on all the discretionary factors to punish them for doing so well academically. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this was done against, you know, black people, it would be an outrage. But, oh, no, it's just Asians. You know, they work harder, they complain, so we can do this to them. Asians today in college admissions are being treated just like Jews were a century ago because the Jews worked very hard and tended to perform very well academically. And if admissions back then were determined largely by academic performance, Jews would have constituted a huge disproportion of college students back then, and nobody wanted that. Well, today, if academic merit constituted the main part of admissions, Asians would take over the colleges. Well, I understand that. Look, we do need diversity, but let's be honest about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And if we're screwing one particular ethnic group, let's acknowledge that too, and see if everybody thinks that's fair.
Journal Inquirer Manchester columnist Chris Powell making his regular monthly check-in with us. And Chris, one more addendum to the Supreme Court decision getting rid, as best colleges will, of preferences by race to admissions here. You know, Chris, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, get rid of legacy admissions here. And I see, fine with me, I see some colleges, including, I guess, Wesleyan, saying, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, well, that's their, that's their business. I don't think anything in the law requires them to do that. If they do that because they think it's a matter of fairness, that's fine. On the other hand, colleges have had legacy admissions because they need to raise money, and they raise money from alumni, and some of their alumni have money, and that helps get their kids into colleges. I mean, look, poverty stinks. And having money is a lot better.
Yes.
And it's going to be that way, you know, for, you know, eternity. And the colleges need money, especially since they're paying their administrators so much. So I suspect a lot of them will keep legacy admissions and just they'll live with the unfairness.
Even the colleges, Chris, I mentioned this the other day. Listen, it's different if you go to a school, right, and you say, oh, my God, look at that new dorm and look at that new building there. And, oh, my God, they're building it and they got approval for a law school. You know, all these capital improvements. But, you know, a lot of times you go to colleges, I did with my son and others, and you say, where's all the money going? Right? It's just they're hitting me for 60, 70, 80 grand a year, and I don't really see, you know, they're not building Starfleet Academy here. You know what I mean?
Well, they've got a lot more administrators. Salaries have gone to the moon. And, you know, in fairness to the colleges, the price increases is also a matter of the federal government subsidizing higher education so much. You know, all this college loan debt, this is not really a gift to students. It's a gift to educators. That's where all the money ends up. And educators' salaries now are very high. And why is this? Because educators constitute the army of the Democratic Party. So, you know, it's a really pernicious alliance. The federal subsidies to higher education have driven the cost up. And we wouldn't have this college loan problem if college was really worth the price in the first place. If you've got all these people coming out of college with college loan debt that they can't repay because they can't get good enough jobs, well, that's a proof to you that college is overpriced.
Chris, you also, in your coming column for the weekend, touch on a couple things that I know you're very passionate about, education here in Connecticut. Who's getting educated? Who's not? You know, the value of a high school diploma, at least in some spots in the state, and this all tied in with, you know, the drone we hear from Hartford is, you know, Connecticut's doing so well, but we still have all these open jobs that need to be filled.
Yeah, we've got this horrifying racial achievement gap and our school system in Connecticut, and everybody knows about it and wrings their hands about it, but we don't really do anything about it. And I think we don't do anything about it because it's largely a question of parenting. I've realized about 40 years ago that any minority kid who is qualified and has a decent education is going to have no trouble getting a job. I mean, 40 years ago, the minority kids themselves figured this out coming out of college, and they started putting in their applications all these various indicators of their race. And why did they do it? Because they knew that the larger companies, the better employers, were looking to integrate, were desperate for people of color. And if you were qualified and you were black or Puerto Rican or, you know, whatever, you were going to get hired. The problem is not that, you know, minority applicants can't get hired. It's that so many are not qualified. And here in Connecticut, you just look at the racial achievement gap, and you know why. You want to get people employed? Have them do well in school. You want them to do well in school? Find them some parents.
And finally, Chris, you tied that all together with the value of someone, with the great philosopher, colorful language as always, from Leo Durocher.
Well, I love the quote, and I'll repeat it for your for your listeners. But I thought it was Leo Durocher put down a mutiny in the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947 because there were some, you know, reflexively racist players on the Dodgers, and they didn't want a black guy, Jackie Robinson, joining the team. And Durocher was managing the team, and he called the players in for a meeting, I think, at a hotel where they were staying, and he told them this. He said, you know, he says I don't care if the guy is yellow or black or has stripes like a blankety blank zebra. I'm the manager of this team, and I say he plays. What's more, I say he can make us all a lot of money, and if any of you blankety blanks don't want it, I'll see that you're traded. And that put down the rebellion. Robinson joined the team, and in fact, some of the racist Dodgers were traded in the following year. And Durocher told them that what matters in the end is merit and ability and willingness to work, and Robinson proved them all wrong.
Chris Powell, thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks much, Paul. Bye-bye.
There you go. Bye-bye. That's true, yeah. I think, was it Dixie Walker on the Dodgers who might have been, I mean, the worst of the worst? And if you read history about that, and if you saw the movie 42 with the late Chadwick Boseman, how Pee Wee Reese, in public, right before a game began when they were doing their warm-ups, went around and put his arm around Jackie Robinson to try and quell whatever was happening. It was on the, might have been in Cincinnati or Philadelphia or even home in Brooklyn, but yeah, true story. All right, thank you, Chris, our regular Thursday afternoon check-in, the guy behind the website, onlyinbridgeport.com. I started talking about this early in the show because, gee, what would somebody want to do with 15,000 absentee ballot applications? Lenny Grimaldi is here to tell us. Lenny, how are you?
Uncle Paulie, what's going on? Yeah, 15,000 absentee ballot applications to control the mayor's office, and that's what this is all about.
Wow. So listen, I said earlier today, now I'm just your friendly host here, Lenny, I said, don't shoot the messenger with me, but you think this is, what, a firm push here to get Marilyn Moore elected?
Of course it is. That's what it's all about. So last week we had, we revealed that according to campaign finance reports of this group, I call it a dark money group because the money's not traceable right now, Bridgeport Generation Now Votes. Their campaign finance report showed that they're going to invest close to $100,000 to further the election of State Senator Marilyn Moore, but they don't disclose where the money's coming from. So, and that violates state law, and various campaign camps are going to charge, probably within the next week or so, of illegal coordination between Bridgeport Generation Now Votes and the Marilyn Moore campaign. But the day after I was on last week's show, two representatives of Gen Now, Kelly Halliman and Jermaine Davis, marched in the town clerk's office and signed out for 15,000 absentee ballot applications that they are going to disseminate throughout the city. Though, why is this a big deal? I mean, some of these far-left groups crack me up because they do worse than the very things they accuse other people of doing. So I've been in the city for covering this stuff for 40 years. Mm-hmm. I have given my age away, I know. But nobody has signed out for 15,000 absentee ballot applications. Now, the thing about Bridgeport politics is so great. It's a city that never disappoints for these kinds of stories. And just because you're the new person on the block claiming that you want to reform the system doesn't mean you're any better than the other people you're accusing. So this is definitely one to watch. This is not going away. I think, I've talked to supporters of Marilyn Moore privately. She doesn't like this. Publicly, she hasn't said anything. Because technically, by state law, they're not allowed to coordinate.
Yeah.
And there's an abundance of evidence that there's coordination going on between the Moore camp and Bridgeport Generation Now Votes.
Interesting. So
because Jermaine Davis, who took out these 15,000 absentee ballot applications, she served as Marilyn Moore's campaign manager in 2019.
So you just said a few seconds ago the other campaigns watching this, they may charge some improprieties here. So I was going to ask you that, Lenny. How will the Gomes campaign, the Daniels campaign, the campaign of Mayor Ganim, is this what they're doing? They're just biding their time here. They're watching what may happen here, and then they'll come out guns blazing or not?
Yeah, I think what the first course of action is going to be in every single campaign is examining this. Someone's going to file, or multiple campaigns will file a complaint with the State Elections Enforcement Commission, which oversees elections throughout the state, and that'll be the first course of action. And they will argue that there is clear coordination against state law between this dark money group and Marilyn Moore for state senate. So there's two pieces here. There's the money that this organization is raising, and they can spend it, right? And there's the money that Marilyn Moore has for her mayoral race. But they can't coordinate that money because it gives them an unfair advantage when they coordinate and pool their money together. So that's the way state law is written. A lot of states have this. But also, it's like this is an organization, Bridgeport Generation Now Votes, that ad nauseum has said, we need public transparency in City Hall and everybody should be open and accountable and this and that. And now they're not doing the same. And that's what makes this an intriguing story, especially with someone like Marilyn Moore's complaint about absentee ballots and, political insidership, hurting the city. And unfortunately, she's entangled in the very same things that she has, criticized.
Lenny Grimaldi is the guest. The website, of course, onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny, the Testo's situation, the former restaurant now the property sold, this 177-unit apartment complex, I guess, somewhat of a high-rise. I'm no architect here. And now we suddenly have, what, a timeout here? What's exactly going on? But you're covering this, and we're hearing and seeing other stuff about, well, the city is saying, well, we would stop if we were you, wink, wink. What's going on here?
Well, a timeout is probably the best way to frame it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the other day, zoning official Paul Boucher temporarily revoked zoning approval for this proposed four-story, 177-unit housing development on property of the former Testo's restaurant in the North End. And there are a bunch of neighbors that don't want this. So it's four stories high. It's going to be 177 units. They're complaining about density. It's not a fit for the community. And so Boucher, anticipating a decision from the city attorney's office, says, okay, let's cool down a little bit and hold off. They have a demolition permit, and they can demolish it. The two separate pieces, because they can demolish it, but the construction is a separate piece. So within the next few days, and we talked about it, the city attorney's office has been noodling this for weeks now about how to approach this. My sense is in a couple of days there'll be a decision. And what I'm hearing through sources, they may very well say, hey, look, you know, we're going to kick this thing, two pieces. We're going to kick this thing back to the Zoning Commission to act on it. And two, there needs to be a public hearing on this so we can hear what the residents of the North End really have to say about it. And that's my sense what will probably happen.
That's an interesting architectural footprint there. You just said four stories and 177 units. I thought it would be higher. So, listen, even a dummy with math like me, Lenny, can say, well, that's about 40 units a floor there, or maybe a little less if there's a fifth floor there. So it's not exactly a high rise, but it sounds like it's got a pretty big footprint here.
Yeah, and so the developers, and one of them is John Getz. His business is located in Bridgeport, Primrose Construction, and John Getz and his construction company, they've done a lot of good work in the city. They've got a bunch of housing development, especially downtown. I mean, they're redoing the former Holiday Inn into new housing units.
Mm-hmm.
They've got two other properties downtown, which are building, you know, hundreds of units of housing in the city. This is his property. He's saying there's politics involved in this. Yeah, we're, you know, less than 2 months away from a Democratic primary.
Yeah.
But the neighbors are saying, we don't want it. And so, you know, how is this going to shake out? There's not going to be any magic answer for the next couple of weeks. This is going to shake out for a while, and my sense is it could very well end up in court.
Lenny, we cannot let you go without getting your thoughts on your former boss, some guy named Trump, who is now facing more legal hurdles, more billable hours with his attorneys. Lenny, how much do you think he is sweating right now? Is his inner circle flipping on him, and will this eventually erode to his support or not?
You know, his inner circle is always a work in progress because, you know, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're working for him, they either leave or he gets upset and he fires them and then he brings other people in. You know, that's the nature of the beast with him, you know. Sometimes they come back again. This one, I think, looking at special counsel's investigation into this insurrection from January 6th, 2021, I think this is going to be – he's going to get charged. The feds are going to charge him. This will be the third one. I think this one will probably have the most traction moving the needle away from him because of just the narrative, the videos, the pictures of that particular day when he gets charged. This is going to be one of those charges that's going to have complete and total saturation worldwide, you know, just going back and revisiting that day. So I think it gives some confidence to people like Ron DeSantis and some of the other challengers who are saying, you know, trying to get a toehold into this guy who still has a very strong hold on his base. But his base alone, Trump's base alone, will not get him elected. It gets him to a certain point. And I think this kind of a charge will further erode Trump's support with unaffiliated voters. So if you look at some of the polling right now, you're seeing unaffiliated voters walking away from Trump that were with him. And a lot of these unaffiliated voters can have a say in these open Republican primary
states. That's right. Yeah, some states have the open primary states. I never thought of that. Yeah,
the open primary states are very, very important. And Trump did really, really well in those, you know, last time around. So, you know, I think there's going to be a narrative that's going to start pretty soon where, you know, DeSantis, you know, he's trying, it's a juggling match for him, right? He wants Trump to implode. Well, you know, he wants it both ways. He wants Trump to implode by holding on to his base.
Yeah.
So he really isn't taking on Trump directly, saying, you know, how many times has he got to get charged? He's kind of like saying, you know, don't weaponize the Justice Department.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Christie, to his credit, he's the only guy with cashews who's saying, you know, as a former prosecutor, he's saying, look, this is not going to be good for Trump or the country. At least he's saying that. But at some point, you know, from just a complete messaging perspective, they're going to start saying, can he win a general election even against Joe Biden, right? And that is going to be a narrative that's going to have to surface. Can he win a general election? And it's going to be tough, you know, all this stuff going on. But, you know, it's been a crazy, you know, time for all of us.
Yeah, nothing like those New Jersey cashews from Mr. Christie there. I like that. I like to say castanets, guglioni, huervos, whatever you like, Lenny. Lenny Grimaldi.
Well, I'm glad you didn't hit the delay on me on that.
No, nothing wrong with cashews. Listen, they got a lot of protein in them. Lenny, thanks. Appreciate it. Lenny, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Okay,
right,
we'll
there
do.
You go.